Good afternoon to everyone, and I won't call the meeting to order yet. We don't have a quorum, but I want to be respectful of our testifiers' time. So welcome back to the committee, and please state your name for the committee and start your presentation.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, I'm Adam Dunnock, the chair of the Met Council, and looking forward today to talking to you today about the governor's budget overview for 2016 and 2017 as it relates to the metro area transit portion. Just wanted to say a couple words on the front end that I think everybody read the announcement last week, that the overall package is $11 billion, but $2.8 billion will be covered in kind of the portion of the presentation today that has to do with metro area transit.
Well, before you start, I guess we do have a quorum now, so we will call this meeting to order. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Transit is important to our community for a lot of reasons. It connects 250,000 people per day for in terms of the rides that we provide, and 97 million transit riders annually. 80% of the rides provided on transit are men and women going to work and school, and 40% of the people who arrive in downtown Minneapolis today take transit. Transit policy sometimes is separated into, you know, roads or bridges versus transit, and one thing that we'd like to spend a little bit of time talking about is how important they work together, that the buses operate on the roads and use the same infrastructure, and we think in a very efficient way. And transit helps the current infrastructure handle more demand as we see growth occur. Commissioner Zelli and I recognize the need to work together to improve the metro region and the state's transportation system, and again, these systems really need to work together. One of the real important reasons why investing in transit matters to our region is the expected growth that we know will occur over the next 30 years, and we just completed our 30-year planning document last spring, which talks about the 800,000 new people we expect to add to the metro region by 2040. In addition to added population, we're going to see added job growth too, 36% added employment. And we take a look at what some of the demographic trends are and what their travel patterns are, and clearly transit continues to be a popular choice by the people in the region. Just a bit of background, you probably heard a little bit about this on Monday from Judd and our other staff, but here's the type of transit we provide: our base bus service, which to emphasize is the backbone of the service. I know that other modes of our transit service we provide get more attention sometimes, but on any given day, 75% of transit riders are on a bus route. That also includes other bus routes such as express bus, bus rapid transit, which is both highway BRT and arterial BRT, light rail transit such as the Blue Line and Green Line, and our commuter rail and Metro Mobility, our dial ride service as well. Next, a couple points about our regional transit system. Again, to say again, 97 million annual rides. Here's the number of buses that are out on the streets every day, the number of bus routes and light rail lines, commuter and BRT lines. And how does Minnesota currently pay for transit? It's a multiple different sources, which sometimes when funding scenarios go up and down and change over time can be of benefit, but from a long-term planning perspective can be really prohibitive for us. But you can see how operations and capital are both funded in different sources: fares, motor vehicle sales tax, state appropriations, and a lot of this would then subsequently change under the governor's proposal. We'll touch on that too.
Mr. Dunnock, if you could just go back to your ridership there.
Sure.
Has there been? Can you estimate what our actual capacity is?
Our capacity in terms of the current system that we run right now, if we were to add riders providing essentially the same service.
Right.
We could look into that and get an answer to you. I don't have that at the tip of my tongue.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dunbeck. Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On that same point, I mean, I think a more useful number is the daily rides.
Sure.
So I don't know if you could provide that for us. I mean, I think there's 14 million trips taken by auto every day in the metro. So what are the number of transit rides, you know, in comparison?
Thank you. Mr. Chair, the daily rides is 250,000 trips are taken on transit right now, today. And we know how to break that out by bus, light rail, where they are. And so that's what it is today, 250,000.
Mr. Chair, that would be very useful to see that breakdown.
Sure. And Representative Runbeck, were you getting to the capacity as well or current ridership?
Mr. Chair, I was not thinking of capacity, but clearly that gives us some breadth of, you know, of a background, really. So,
Representative Sanders.
Mr. Chair, and to Mr. Dunning, I think it would be important to see across all those lines what the capacity is, to echo the Chair's sentiment. So if we have 250,000 rides as of today across all the lines, if all those lines are at capacity, what would that ridership be? That would be helpful.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We'll definitely get that information. It's hard to say today. I mean, some of our bus routes are at capacity and over capacity, and we see that daily. We get reports of that when buses go by and they can't pick people up. And then other buses run certainly not at capacity and are carrying, you know, 5, 10, 20 riders instead of 40 or 50.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But we'll get that information.
Great. Thank you.
Next, just to touch on the state funding over recent years. There was certainly a funding shift in 2006 that occurred with the motor vehicle sales tax amendment, giving us a source of dedicated funds, which helped stabilize some of our funding issues. But the fact is that on a year-by-year basis, or biannually, every 2 years, we're uncertain about what the general fund appropriation will be, whether some of the bonding requests that we make will be fulfilled or not. And we've just had a state funding situation that is unpredictable and unreliable, and so that's one of the main reasons why the governor has proposed the transit sales tax in the metro area. And over the past 10 years, we focused on overcoming the bus funding shortfalls, and even in the scenario that we've had, we've actually seen an increase in ridership. So again, to the question of capacity, the ridership has grown over the last 10 years by 14%. Even in the era that we haven't had the kind of funding to continue to run the service that we wanted to, we've been able to essentially maintain about the same bus service while adding some new additional routes. The other ever-growing pressure on our budgets comes from Metro Mobility. As a federal mandate, we have to fund Metro Mobility, which means we end up shorting our bus service to do so. And we also know that with the projected growth in population and the aging population, Metro Mobility will continue to grow at the rate in which we've seen them over the last 10 years. So what does the next 10 years look like without investment? Again, we'll continue to show the bus service staying at about the same rate in terms of what our fleet is and what our capacity is while demand continues to grow. Transitway development will continue, but slowly, and will not be as competitive federally with the other peer regions around the country. And the regular route bus system will deteriorate due to growing population and demand, continued need to fund Metro Mobility.
We do have a question, Mr. Dunn, Representative Sanders.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then Mr. Shetland or Mr. Dunnick. So going back here just over your last few comments from the Band-Aid page, through the first point on this page here, I just want to make sure I understand everything, especially in context of the governor's budget and kind of what you guys have laid out here in the packet. So I guess my first basic general question is, you know, does this need exist, the significant deficit? Does this need, this deficit exist because, in a sense, we've created this need? We've expanded 20 new lines, with the quarter-cent sales tax. We're looking at about $115 million for CTIB in 2015 alone. Can you kind of put this all in context? How do we reconcile all that?
Mr. Dunnick.
Sure, I'll take a stab at it, and Judd can add in, chime in if he'd like. I think partially there's certainly an ongoing operating need that the state has made its a commitment to, and that's part of what was the budget that was, or the bill that was passed in 2008. And so part of it is that need that we've created, but part of it is also a growing demand on the service that we do provide. It's a little bit of both. I think I had this conversation with the chair, and I think it's important to be upfront. Transit is subsidized. It's a subsidized form of transportation. But so is driving, and so are other ways that we move around the region too. And so striking the right balance is something that we're trying to do here. We're not asking, I don't think, for an unreasonable amount of revenue. We're asking for a good amount of revenue that will help grow the system with the demand and also put the system on the map from a system standpoint so that the lines are coming online together and the systems can then work together. It will help create more demand to have the system come online that way. And certainly there's been a lot in terms of the ridership behavior, the travel behavior we've seen over the last 10 years or so, there's increased demand for it.
And Mr. Chair,
Mr. Shutton,
just to add a little bit about the when we talk about the transit system facing a significant deficit, that is just for our current system today. But we talk about the governor's plan is to build the system, have more bus service, more transitway investment. But just today with the current general fund base, we will be short on the operations for the central corridor, the Green Line, in state fiscal year 16 and 17, because in the previous budget we received funds to operate for half of a year, and now we need a biennial budget. So central corridor is going to require some additional funding just in 16 and 17, and there's a state statute 473.4051 that requires the state to pay 50% of those operating costs. We also know that there is a growth in metro mobility that we have to fund. And so when we talk about the ongoing deficit that the transit system is going to have to pay, it's really because of the growth in metro mobility and the state's responsibilities toward those operating funds. And so just in this biennium, we need additional funds. And so what this budget does is allows us to cover that and then add that new bus service and new transitway expansion into the future.
Mr. Shutton, just in that response, though, you kind of coupled them together again when you talk about and the expansion into the future.
Yep.
Just to clarify, are you saying that we face a significant deficit in not sure what significant really is at this point, just in our base system right now, as opposed to all the additional lines that we want to increase and increase our capacity?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. It is in the current system because we know that with the increased growth in metro mobility, that our state general fund is about $77 million a year. Of that, about $50 to $55 million of that is spent on metro mobility. Just in the growth in metro mobility, we expect our full general fund appropriation to have to go to metro mobility by the 2018-2019 biennial budget, and we are required by state and federal statute to provide that. And then on top of that, we've got the increment that involves the transitway operations that's required in law. So even with metro mobility, we will have additional costs for those current transitways into the future. So we know that just within the next 3, 4, 5 years that there's going to be, and I mean, yes, I use the word significant, and I think that it is because it's just going to continue to grow and compound over time. So that's what's meant by that.
Thank you. Representative Sanders, follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think just one or two follow-ups from that discussion. So if we're talking about the current deficit and the current system, and you talk about the growing demand for metro mobility, and then we talk about the unfunded state share of rail operations, is that what's the correlation there from poor fare box recovery versus, I mean, how do we reconcile how the lines are actually doing versus what you say are unfunded state share of those rail operations?
Mr. Shannon?
I guess I'm trying to understand the what Brian Lamb, who was here on Monday, talked about as far as fare recovery. He showed that on our light rail lines that we are collecting somewhere between 38% and 40% of our subsidy for those lines through our fare box. And that is at, if not the highest, in the top 10% of what our peer regions are doing. So we know that what we are asking the passenger to pay is very consistent and actually higher than what other transit systems around the country provide. So I think that we're very competitive on that end. And Representative Sanders, if you had a follow-up question, I'm trying to remember what that one was.
Representative Sanders.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we're reaching 38% to 40% of our subsidy. We're collecting that from the fare box currently. Correct. Okay. So, I guess my question is, we'll look forward to the information coming to us about the capacity and that sort of thing. And it kind of dovetails into that of, I guess the question is, if we're going to be expanding with 20 new lines, and it seems like right now we're having a tough time with the current system, the current structure, and it basically sounded like, you know, this is kind of if we build it, they will come type of, if we build these lines out, then hopefully we'll build demand. And so it's just a mentality of, it seems that if we build it, they will come, and it doesn't seem to have worked so far. We haven't quite figured out the recipe for what we've done so far. So it's a question of, looking forward to gathering all the other information and taking a look, and studying that a little bit farther.
Thank you. Any comment, Mr. Dunnock?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Sanders, I think that those are good questions to ask. I think that's, the onus is on us to show that there's a good reason to. I think that some of the reasons are specific to farebox recovery and specific to how the system does. Some of them are also, some of the arguments is how we do competitively and how we retain the workforce here and how we compete to draw businesses here and those kinds of questions, too.
If possible, someone's phone is interrupting the, or interfering. You may want to check that memo. Try and continue here, Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and for either one of the testifiers. I don't think it's, I'm certainly not here to debate the validity of transit or air, because I think it is a very important piece, and I think it's a transportation system that is important for a lot of people that use it. I just want to be careful that we don't alienate each other too much, because I could also make the argument that car drivers pay 100% of their cost versus the fare box of only a percentage. So I think that's important. But my question is a couple of things. One is, in your slide, you talk about the past 10 years focused on overcoming bus funding shortfalls. Well, I'm a budgetary person, and I have to deal with budgets and so forth. And there's many ways in which you talk about the shortages of not making income and expenses match. One also is, maybe our expenses were too high, or maybe our processes were too high. So I think when you indicate that it's all because of funding that we're having this issue, I think there could be a debate about that as well. So you might want to comment about that. But the main question that I have is in regards to the governor's proposal for expansion of the 20-plus additional transit ways. It implies, at least, that those dollars are for that expansion. And yet we know that with every expansion, there is additional riders. With that riders, there are also additional subsidies. My question, I guess, is there enough money in the budget then to handle that additional subsidy for those riders?
Mr. Dunnock?
Sure, Mr. Chair. I'll start, and if Jed wants to chime in on that as well. To the question of the reason that we want to build out the transit ways, so first of all, the way I would describe our funding situation is we're on track to, if we remain in about the current revenue scenario, which is receiving some general funds every 2 years, some bonding, some obviously motor vehicle sales tax that's dedicated, we would be on a trajectory to add around 20 transit ways, give or take, over 40 years. And what the governor's proposal does is it accelerates that build out into a 10-year period. And the reason to do so, I believe, has to do with growing the economy here, attracting jobs here, making sure that we make a statement nationally that we're invested in a transit system. So it's, the reasons are both how we do and how we perform on a day-to-day basis in terms of fare box recovery and showing that the system's efficient, but there's also, to me, a macro-level reason to build out the transitway system as well. So it's, the funding situation, the other thing I'll say about the funding situation is we take at face on our current transportation policy plan that the state funds that have been given in the past will continue, and that's never a guarantee. We've seen those come and go depending on state budget situations, depending on other impacts to to our service, but we, you know, we're hopeful that we can stay on that trajectory. But the reason that we are asking for an accelerated build out has to do with growing the system and having a transit system that works together, as well as, frankly, the roads. I mean, that's the other piece of this that I think, you know, you hear about from me as well as Commissioner Zelli, is in order to grow the road system, a lot of that has to do with expanding the bus capacity so we can move people around efficiently.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question, though, the logic still, I think, I fail to see. If we've talking about in the last 10 years, we've got a funding shortage, and so that would imply that we're already in a hole with building out the current infrastructure and building and putting together replacement for facilities and equipment and so forth, and this expansion just accelerates the expansion without addressing that. Aren't we still in a hole?
Mr. Dunning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Petersburg. I think that, first of all, the build-out that we have seen thus far, especially over the last 10 years, has not included that base bus system. That's one of the big, you know, that's what we strongly advocate for and have been talking a lot about over the last few weeks. The transitways have been built out. We've seen the Green Line come online. We've seen, you know, the Red Line be added and service be added. But the basic bus service has either stayed the same, even though demand grows. And, again, I think it's important. The system needs to work together that way too. The bus lines feed the transitways. The transitways help support the bus lines, and it's a matter of moving that system together.
Again, Paul.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, and I certainly understand that we have an infrastructure transportation system that is very interreliability on everything as well. But just a little bit ago, you said that your current system had planned on having some of this infrastructure built out in the next 20 years anyway. So that indicates that maybe it wasn't going to include busways and transitways as well. And if not, why hasn't it been up to this point?
Mr. Dunning.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure. I totally understand the question.
Well, earlier, if I could follow up, earlier you said that the reason why we've got the extra build-out is that, first of all, your system had already had in place the ability for that to occur over 20 years, and this is just accelerating it to 10. And yet, then you went on to say, but we haven't really expanded any of our bus routes in the last 10 years. And so my question is, I mean, it seems like you're saying one thing and then another, and I'm not following.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, I apologize if I'm not being as clear about that as I should be. What I said was, in over 30 years, there's the potential for the system to stay where it is and add transitway lines, which is the trajectory we're on, but that trajectory wouldn't include adding the bus service that we strongly advocate for, the basic bus service as well as the transitways, both of them. Because when we build out a transitway, there's a funding formula that currently shows 30% of those funds come from CTIB, the County's Transit Improvement Board, 10% from the local match, either the rail authority or a city or a mix of those funds, and the state has a 10% share. And that state 10% share has historically been the most difficult to come by. If you look at Central Corridor, if you look at Southwest today, so it would help alleviate that on the capital side. But from a what the next 30 years looks like and accelerating that build out into 10, that's again where the basic bus service would improve, and we would be able to fund that. We can't, and under the current revenue that we're anticipating, motor vehicle sales tax, the regular general funds appropriations, we're able to either maintain or see a deterioration.
So if I could just ask the final question, Mr. Chair. So am I correct in hearing that you believe that in the future there are going to be enough funds to handle the additional subsidy for the additional riders on our transit systems?
Mr. Dunning.
Yes, I do believe so, yeah.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of quick comments that were made just a few minutes ago that I think bear, us to look at the facts of the matter. I think there was an implication, I think Representative Sanders had said if you build it, they will come, but so far they haven't come on these transitways, and the facts are the opposite. Both on the blue line and the green line, we've exceeded the projections exponentially. And so this is actually an incredibly popular mode of transit, and you know, it is actually, again, met and significantly exceeded projections. I take the train every day, and I can tell you, if you're worried about excess capacity, you can come during the rush hour and people are standing. So this is, you know, this is not the case at all. They've been built, and they are coming, and they are coming in large numbers. And then there was a comment around that the cars, the drivers of cars are subsidizing their trips 100%. Well, there's significant subsidy for roads. And I am not going to get into this roads versus transit discussion. I think we have to work as a committee to adequately fund the need for both. And it seems like, you know, we all go to this one Minnesota conference at the beginning of session, and then as soon as we get into a discussion about transit, all of a sudden we're pitting modes against each other and we're pitting regions against each other. And I really hope that as we do our work as a committee, that we understand that both roads and transit are needed, are used, are underfunded, and that we work together to fund both modes. So, you know, maybe we can talk to House Research or some other experts if people don't believe that we're subsidizing roads. We certainly are, and we should get that data. But I hope that myth is debunked, because we're certainly subsidizing drivers, as we should. And we ought to be understanding, again, that we're looking at one of the most efficient transit systems in the country. And so, again, people are worried about capacity on buses. You know, then we can go and talk about capacity on roads in the state that, you know, that have one or two cars per hour. I don't think it's constructive. I don't think it's helpful. And I think we should really be working together to move the entire state forward.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein. Well said. I'll echo that to the degree that we want to make sure we understand the funding and to what our projections are. I think those questions are important, but thank you for your comments. Representative Sanders, to the point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hornstein, I appreciate the sentiment behind your comments, but, you know, my phrase of "if you build it, they will come" was directly, you know, maybe a tad bit of literary license, but repeating exactly what Mr. Dunnick said of, you know, we're hoping to build out these lines, and as we do that, that's how we build demand. I believe those were almost his exact words, or close to it, paraphrasing perhaps. But the point is, Representative Hornstein, and the whole context of my question was not just slamming more rail lines or whatever, but it goes to a deeper contextual question that we need an answer to. We have here listed on their handouts, we have eight different funding mechanisms. We have them saying that state funding in recent years has been a Band-Aid. We've got you know, growth amongst a bunch of different lines, and we have them saying the transit system faces a significant deficit. So my words that I also believe said is we haven't quite got the recipe right, which means, great, if ridership's up, then we are doing something else horrendously wrong. If we're getting the capacity and the ridership that we need, yet we still have significant deficits in the current system, and we're planning on building out at the capacity that the governor's budget and others have said. So, again, close my comments the last time saying looking forward to getting all of the information from them and learning more. But if we have exponentially blown out of the water our ridership expectations, then I think we're doing something else wrong, and there needs to be a whole lot more investigation as to where these dollars are coming and where they're going and how we do this correctly. I don't see how you can have eight different funding sources you know, and still have such a tremendous deficit, significant deficit in their words, and still want to build out the system at the rate that they want to say. We have to get the recipe right. We can't continue to do the way things do things the way that we've been doing and hoping for a different result.
Mr. Chair, if I could just say,
Mr. Dunnick, and then we will need to move on.
Yeah, just in response, I think I said something along the lines of if we build it, they will come, but it's both to plan for the growth we know will occur, mm-hmm. but then also to be thinking about attracting additional growth on top of that, and I think that's an important point to make. And then the sequence might be a little out of we'll get to some of these questions about the state funding that we've experienced, and I think that'll answer some of it. But a big portion of what the governor's budget is trying to accomplish here is actually to remove some of how Minnesota has paid for transit and change it to a more reliable, dedicated funding source like the sales tax.
Thank you, Mr. Dunnick. We do have three more representatives on the list for questions. We'll allow those questions, and then we'll go to the budget proposal. Representative Nash.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Members, Mr. Dunnick, Mr. Shetland, if you look at the handout that was given, you see that I represent Carver County. We have been an opt-out for years now, and we have our own transit system, and yet I see in the governor's budget proposal that he wants to now have Carver County begin paying in that sales tax. And the word from my constituents and myself is, we see in your map there's no planned projects in that area, and in the eloquent words of one of my folks, they feel like an ATM machine for projects elsewhere. And if you could just help us understand the justification behind that.
Mr. Dunnick or Mr. Shetland?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Nash. The response I would give is the plan is, and we've talked already with some of the suburban transit providers, is to work with them on their plans and fund as a portion of the governor's budget what the suburban transit providers currently plan and allow them to expand and grow their service too, which we know that a number of them provide significant service around the region. We wouldn't change that structure, so it would still, the funds would come to the council, but we then appropriate those dollars to the suburban transit providers.
Just a quick follow-up, Mr. Chair, thank you. Follow-up. So your plan still is to work with the area providers, but yet still levy the tax?
Yes.
Mr. Dunning.
Thank you.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Shetton and Mr. Dunnick. Mr. Dunnick, we haven't had a chance to really get to know you. As a matter of fact, many of us are new to the committee, too. One of the things, I know you were appointed recently, and I'm wondering, I was looking through the campaign finance records, and you were the chair and the treasurer of WIN Minnesota, the Political Action Fund, and also of the 2014 fund, both large contributors to the Alliance for a Better Minnesota, really the kind of the Democrat political arm that many of the Republican members here have intimate experience with. So my question to you is, at least as of yesterday, you still are listed as the chair and the treasurer of those two organizations, and also indicate on the Alliance for a Better Minnesota, of which you are also a trustee or a director or officer or something, that you spend 50 hours a week with them. So maybe you can help us out. Do you still have those commitments, or are you still officially in those capacities while you're also working as director or your whatever? I don't remember your position.
Chair,
thank you, of the Met Council.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Dunnick.
The quick answer is no. I left that position in mid-January to take this position, and that was the last job I had. But if you look at my entire body of work, you'll see the significant work on transportation policy going back to my days with the operating engineers and working with members on both caucuses on important issues around infrastructure. And I look forward to, I'm happy to talk with you offline or after this committee about that.
Appreciate you answering that, Mr. Dunnick.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Atkins.
No, pass.
Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the note of meeting or exceeding projections in terms of ridership, and specifically in regards to commuter rail and light rail, so I can better understand a historical perspective, there have been several systems, government systems such as MNsure, who have had their projections revised downward several times, and then statements about meeting projections. I'm wondering, again, for historical perspectives, is that true of commuter or light rail?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And
Mr. Dunnick.
The answer to that is actually we've had to revise ours up, with one exception. North Star has been one that we have had some trouble with the ridership on that route. But both the Blue Line LRT, Green Line LRT, as well as the Red Line, we've seen success above and beyond what our projections are. In fact, they've right now. The Green Line was projected to, I think, have around 26 to 28,000 riders a day, and we're at around 37 to 39,000 riders a day.
Thank you, Mr. Knack. Please continue with the budget proposal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize. I'm going to have to leave in about 10 minutes. I'm heading out to a meeting out in Washington County, so I'll get as far into this as I can and then turn over to Judd. But what we wanted to walk through now is what the governor's budget does, both what it will allow us to help fund and what it will change in the way of past funding sources. So the half-cent transit sales tax will dedicate, as you see the numbers in front of you, in fiscal year 2016 and 2017, and will allow the accelerated expansion of our entire system. Kind of already covered some of this, but you can also see that in addition it will relieve the general fund of its past obligations to transit. Now, some people would actually maybe make the point that this general fund should get, be appropriated to help transit, but we think that the transit sales tax is a fair way of both capturing the tax paid here by visitors and travelers, as well as giving us the dedicated funds that we need to grow the system. Furthermore, it will relieve the state's GEO bonding share. Again, I talked about that funding pie. You'll probably see that at different points in time, both from us as well as from the county's Transit Improvement Board, as a way of funding the large, big public works projects, especially the ones that are eligible for federal dollars. The state has to put forward now a 10% share, and this sales tax would allow us to replace those funds from the source. Next, it would provide us the type of funding source that will allow us to plan the system. Again, we are in a time where every two years we're doing the regional service improvement plan, where we are taking inventory of the routes that are out there today, how well they're performing from a subsidy standpoint, and figure out which ones we need to add service to, which ones it makes sense to take a little bit of service away from. With this kind of a predictive funding source, we'll be able to grow the system in a long-term way, in a comprehensive way. Here's another important reason that we talk about the sales tax. Some people have asked, why would you do the sales tax? And one of the primary reasons, it's a very popular way to fund transit expansion around the country. It's competitive with their local economies. But when you look at some of the other our peer regions, you see that the local share that they are able to raise and match helps better position themselves for federal dollars, and it helps to grow out their system in a bigger way. There's, I think, some good literature on the maps of different systems in different regions. And again, ours is a couple different lines that you saw a few slides back, as opposed to the really important network and how the system works well together.
And Mr. Chair, if I can just add one point here. On the current quarter cent that we have in the metro area, that is the local option sales tax that is levied by the five counties within the metro area, and those funds can only be used for transitway capital and transitway operating purposes. So they are not used to help fund the regular out bus system or for the suburban transit provider. So for context, you know that sales tax that is currently in place is through the counties and is not a current sales tax that comes to the council for Metro Transit.
Thank you.
And so this slide shows, Mr. Chair and members, some of the corridors that we've done significant planning and work already on, and others are in the earlier stages of planning. But this is essentially a version of what this $2.8 billion will help both build and operate. Southwest LRT, Botno LRT. And the point I want to make here is just that out of the 20 transitways, it's hard to know exactly how many of them will be LRT versus bus, but we think that at least 16 and potentially 17 of the corridors will be busways. And then as a visual, I think this is, again, really helpful to see how the transit system works together, and that we're going to have a system that there's enough frequency. The way I like to describe it is when you go catch the train or a high-frequency bus route today, you don't look at a schedule or you don't plan your whole day around it. You just go up to the platform and you catch the bus or catch the train there because you know it's going to be there. And this will allow us to, again, accelerate the build-up of an entire system so that that's what we'll have in this region. No matter if you're southwest, northeast, all parts of the region, you'll be able to get on a high-frequency route and connect in with the transit service. A couple other points to add about what the $2.8 billion will include. It will be an increase in our regional bus system by almost 30% over again 10 years, so around 3% growth per year. More routes, more frequent service, a modernized system that will allow for better coordination with the traffic lights, better use of on-time and real-time information, additional heated shelters and better amenities, the kind of signage and hopefully transit system that this region prioritizes and can help us grow into the future. And from a bus perspective, we've done a significant amount of work. This proposal is similar to the one that the governor made 2 years ago, similar amount of revenue and similar amount in terms of what the capital transitway will buy you. But one thing that we've spent a lot of time at Metro Transit is working on what bus routes would be increase in frequency, which routes would be added, and how much additional coverage we'd have, and this map shows that. And then some of the outcomes were...
Mr. Dunick, we do have one question.
Sure.
Representative Unbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so regarding this budget rollout, if I understand right, you and the governor are asking then for enough revenue from the transit tax to essentially be sort of cut loose from having to come to the Capitol and seeking funds for operating and seeking funds for capital for both?
Mr. Chair.
Okay. I mean, and
Rimmick, yes.
Okay. So the question is then, what opportunity is there for, because you're an unelected body, for citizens who object to this, the plan, mm-hmm. to weigh in at all? I mean, why would we cut you loose? It seems to me we want to have a little more opportunity to weigh in mm-hmm. If the plan is getting beyond us.
Sure. Mr. Chair and Representative Runbeck, great question. I think a couple things. One, that our the plan that we currently go through goes under a significant amount of public outreach and involvement when we're looking at adding transitways. So from an individual project standpoint, I think that's important to keep in mind. I do think that you raised a larger question of governance, and I think that's a conversation we'll continue to have as it relates generally to the council as well as specific to this transit sales tax. I'm a little bit familiar with the Senate proposal, which asks that Metro Transit works with the county's Transit Improvement Board for joint certification over how the funds get allocated. And I think, you know, we're open to ideas like that. If there are ways, I think there's been past proposals floated where the legislature is involved too in the funding decisions, or some sort of like either a committee or a group that involves the Met Council chairs of the Transportation Committee. I think those are good suggestions and things that we would be open to talking about.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Mr. Dunick, I realize you have to leave shortly. So I do have a question just in regards to trying to understand the information that we're getting this morning, and then looking at your policy plan just released January 2015. And in this, it says several things about transit spending. It says funding needs for existing bus system operations are met throughout the time period of the plan. Funding needs for existing bus and support systems are met. Funding needs for existing transitway operations and capital preservation on the Metro Blue Line, Green Line, Red Line, North Star are fully funded. The capital and operating expansion costs are fully funded. So if this is the report just out in January and you're talking about everything is funding throughout the time period, this 2040 plan, what are we seeing here this morning or this afternoon?
Sure. That's a great question, and I think it's one that we will continue to be asked this session and should have a be ready with the answer. I think I'll reiterate a couple of the high points that I see as a reason to do this. One is the accelerated build out of the system so that we have a system sooner than having pieces of a system that are coming online every 2, 3, 5 years, and to be able to do that in a 10-year period. The other thing I'll just add is that the current revenue scenario that plan is based on suggests that motor vehicle sales tax revenue will continue to be strong and grow with inflation, grow with growth. It assumes that the general fund appropriation will continue to grow, and actually probably grow quicker than it has been growing, because Metro Mobility, our costs are going up by 8 to 12% a year. And it also assumes then the state bonding component, large portions of state bonding bills will be made up of a way to fund some of these transitway projects. And so what we're trying to do here is think about a different revenue source that will replace those funds. And so if you know, to think about it another way, if you're serving on other committees or you work in other areas other than transportation, is there, you know, is there relief to the general fund? Is there relief to a bonding bill? You could think about doing different things with those budgets. And the metro sales tax will be solely dedicated and the reliable source for transit funding.
And Mr. Chair, if I can just add one point to that, is that you're working off the transportation policy plan. And that plan, as Chair Dunnick just mentioned, is based on historical funding levels. And what that plan also shows over that period of time is that there is no regular out bus growth over that period of time, because looking back 10 years, there was no funding for regular bus growth at that in the previous 10 years. So while we are able to grow and put some transit ways out there over that period of time, as the Chair said, we are assuming that the state is going to pay their share, because that's just based on a historical benefit from looking back 10 years. But that assumption does not identify the funds or appropriate those funds. And at the same time, it doesn't assume any growth in bus over that period of time. So it really is a federal exercise that we have to go through, that all regions go through to create their transportation policy plans. What this is a plan that is actually comprehensive, includes the acceleration of more transit ways, but it also includes the investment in bus that just hasn't occurred.
Thank you. And Mr. Dong, I know you've stayed over your time. Please feel free to take this moment. We have a break and going into the budget proposal if you'd like. I don't.
Great. I will, and I'm sure I'll be back, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. Representative Drazkowski, do you have a question?
I do, Mr. Chair. Mr. Shetnin, can you tell us, I remember last session hearing from some, maybe it was you, I don't know, some fiscal person from Met Council suggested that there's currently, at least at that time, $700 million in investment by the Met Council. Can you describe that and what it is, where it's from, what it's intended to do, and why it's there?
Mr. Shetnin.
Mr. Chair and Representative Drazkowski, I'm not exactly sure. You may be referring to a bill we had last year, but I know if you're talking about our budget or what we do with our budget, we do have a budget just short of $1 billion that covers all of the different services that the council provides. However, much of that is really debt service that funding debt service for our wastewater system that serves the metro area. I can speak specifically to the transportation piece of it if you'd like, but I think that that's what Mr. Burris and Mr. Lee provided the committee earlier this session. I guess I'm not quite sure what the $700 million figure is, but I'm happy just to follow up with you after committee, and we can figure that out, and we can share that with the committee at that time. But I apologize. I just don't know.
Appreciate that, Mr. Chair. And I remember it was short, medium, and long-term investments combined $700 million. So appreciate that.
And
thank you.
Mr. Chair, that related to a bill that allowed the council to invest similar to ways that Hennepin County, Ramsey County, the City of St. Paul, and the City of Minneapolis have for our investments. And that's what Representative Drazkowski is speaking to, and I will have our CFO and I will come up and have a conversation to explain that, because that was about 9 months ago, so I apologize for that. I just can't remember it off the top of my head.
Thank you. Please continue, Mr. Shetnin.
Great. Well, thank you. I'll move here with the outcomes of what we are, what we would expect to occur with the sales tax. We would expect our ridership to grow by 70 to 80%. Right now we're about 100 million riders, and we would grow that to 170 to 180 riders by 2040. I apologize, that is an error there. In your handout, I believe it says 2040. We just missed that, so I apologize. But we do still see a huge amount of new ridership coming along with this investment. We also will attract new residents and jobs to the region. I know that Todd Klingel from the Minneapolis Chamber is here to make a few comments as well, and I think he'll be able to speak to that. We improve bus access to a million jobs with those transitways. With the additional frequency, with the new service, and with the new transitways, we offer mobility for people to move throughout the region and actually have a system that provides that new access to the million jobs. So that's really a big part of of what we're trying to do here, because as we mentioned on Monday, 80% of the people who use transit take it to work or take it to school. And as we also know, we've got 800,000 more people coming, so transit takes advantage of the current infrastructure we have by moving people. I'm sure I've said this to folks before, but just for context, on 35W during rush hour, the buses that drive people up and down 35W in the morning and afternoon carry the equivalent of a lane and a half of traffic during that period of time. So that is significant. Now add to that the population that's going to come to the region and over the next 25 years, and things are just going to get worse. So we think transit has to be part of the solution. This is the point, I guess, on what transit does regarding mobility. You can see the 60 people who are riding the bus versus the 60 people who are in their cars. And I have to say that there is excess capacity in those cars as well, because if you've got one person per car, most cars have more than one seat. And so I'd like to share that point. Again, the strong transit system contributes to the regional competitiveness. I think that that there's no doubt about that. We see that our peer regions are doing similar types of investments, and regional competitive is important. And I know, again, that you'll hear from the business groups that will say that as well. It spurs development. The Metro Green Line has had over $2.8 billion in investment. And, Mr. Chair, I have to clarify, when we met with you the other day, we were thinking that, there, I was thinking that the Viking Stadium was included in this, and it is not. And so we actually have $2.8 billion of development that came along the Green Line here in Minneapolis and St. Paul. And another note is that 2.7 of the $2.8 billion came before the line even opened. So once we announced the Green Line was coming, and before it opened, we had $2.7 billion worth of development there. And you'll also see that on the blue line, we've got 15,000 new housing units. Just going to wrap up with some of the job impacts here. Transit investment does create jobs. On Central Corridor, Green Line alone, we had over 5,500 employees who helped construct that line. And I would also share that this is not just a metro area investment, because on the Central Corridor, and we would expect the same on the Southwest Corridor, or Green Line Extension, Blue Line, and as we build the other bus investments, that there are construction workers who come from all over the state to help build these lines. So I think this is significant and something to share, that that those jobs aren't just here in the metro area. We also have information that shows where our subcontractors come from and where our contractors come from, and they come from outside the metro area as well as within the metro area. So with that, Mr. Chair, I believe that I just want to say that we appreciate the opportunity to share this. And the bill, which will have much more detail about the plan, should be introduced here within the next week to 10 days or so. So hopefully we'll have a chance to come and talk more of the specifics about the funding bill. But I'm happy to take any other questions you might have. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Shetnin. Any further questions from members? Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Shetnin, just looking at page 6 of the governor's budget, so transit ridership total, and I don't know if that includes, does that include bus? Does that include park and rides? Is it the sum total?
Are you talking about page 6 of our presentation?
Yeah. Well, yes. I mean, sorry. It's the governor's budget. It's your budget, right? Mr. Chair,
Representative Rumbach, correct.
Okay. So it looks like flat ridership. And now I don't know if it includes everything, buses, park and rides, et cetera. But, you know, it's not, I mean, we're adding things, but really we're not getting any bigger numbers. So something is, you know, we're fewer bus riders, as you've maybe said. But, I mean, I think that's the point. I mean, there's sort of a maximum, and you know, the transit rider that's maybe going to be 5-6% of total commutes ever. I mean, every city that's done it is seeing really no more than 4-5% using transit to go to work. So, I mean, I think, you know, to proceed, I guess, the way we are with numbers that are kind of sugar-coated, I guess, seems very difficult.
Mr. Shetland.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rumbeck, I'll have to take a look at those numbers. I'm not sure if they include the new Green Line numbers as well, but going back to earlier in our presentation, we mentioned that there has been very, very limited bus growth, and over that time, our bus passenger ridership count has gone up over 14%. And so we know that there is demand there, and we expect that there's probably latent demand there as well. And I don't think we're sugarcoating the numbers. I will also say, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, that that transit does provide mobility in the corridors by opening up, by actually opening up capacity when we carry that many folks. That would be the equivalent of a lane and a half of traffic on 35, and the number is similar on 394. And so, you know, it's a debate that we're happy to have, and we'll, I'm sure, have lots of time in the session to do that. But we believe that it's a good investment, and we also believe that we need to plan now because we know that the growth is coming to the region, and we know that's happening. It has happened and will continue to happen.
Thank you. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I suspect, Mr. Shetland, that probably one of your biggest complaints is from communities like mine who think you aren't providing enough service. There are many, many neighborhoods. It comes right out of communities. They want this. They desire it. They believe it's essential for their economic health and competitiveness to be, I always use the phrase, they don't want to be the town where the train doesn't stop.
Right.
I mean, we understand that kind of infrastructure, and it absolutely, everyone now understands it is part of how they stay healthy and competitive. And one of the changes, I think, that's so dramatic is the young demographic. We know we have an aging population, and that young demographic, we'd better attract in large number because they're going to pay the bills. Yep. For that group that is retiring. And all of the statistics we see is in some of those areas, and you showed us the transit dedicated sales tax. I would just take Denver, which was at 1 cent. I think the business community understands Denver is attracting more of that young demographic than we are because of the kinds of investments they're making. They're going there and they're not going here. That is a future threat for us. So there are all sorts of reasons. One is a practical reason that a person who lives in a community wishes the bus came near them, but the other is the economic argument, and that is this new demographic that we need to attract wants different things, and one of those is transportation choices.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, I know that that Mr. Klingel from the chamber would echo those, and I know he's scheduled to speak here in just a little bit.
Representative Howell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I guess I just want to make the comment that we all understand that or we all can agree that possibly that transit is an economic engine and helps things go, just like Representative Hausman said. But my concern is we're putting a lot of dollars in the region, and what I want to make sure we don't do is forget about Greater Minnesota Transit, because we should share the wealth and spread the wealth so Greater Minnesota also has those transit opportunities. And you don't stick all 800,000 people down here in the region, and let's include Minnesota. Yep. In the region.
Yep. And Mr. Chair and Representative Howell, we agree with you, and I know MnDOT will be in here eventually to give their presentation. And if I have the numbers right, with what is being proposed in the overall plan, is enough to take care of 90% of the stated needs of Greater Minnesota Transit over that same period of time. So there will be significant investment is there, and transportation is important for everyone. So what we invest here in the metro area helps Greater Minnesota and vice versa. So and same with roads versus transit. So we agree with you.
Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I got to remind everyone that the wealth we're sharing is the metro's wealth. Did anybody stop and think about that? Because the breadbasket is a seven-county metro area, which outproduces economically the rest of the counties by about 60-some percent to 40 percent. So the wealth we're sharing out there that you want us to share is coming out of the metro area. So let's not forget that while we're parceling up the dollars.
Representative Joskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Mr. Shetton, and I don't know who would answer this, but it's interesting when government comes to us and creates these developments thinking they are going to be the panacea for connecting job creators, and it was interesting hearing that we're going to connect all these employers to all these potential employees. It really sounds kind of nifty, kind of I don't know what the best word is to describe it, but certainly not realistic. But I'm wondering, so when we are going to go, regardless of where we're taking this, obviously this is to take money from people in the seven-county metro region and to extract it, obviously against their will. I don't think they're going to willfully give up that sales tax. But has there also been done a study on how many jobs we're going to kill in each of those communities in the metro area as we extract this money from them and their ability to provide jobs and concentrate it in here in St. Paul before we deploy it for these goodies that apparently seem to attract people and ask people or motivate people to want more of it. A free thing that you don't pay for is usually something that's that comes that way. But have we done that? Have we looked at the impact, the negative impact that taking this money from job providers and families is going to have on the metro region?
Mr. Chair, Representative Joskowski, that work has not been done, but if we want to do comparisons, we can look at the slide that shows the investments that our peer cities are doing with the sales tax, and you can see that our metropolitan area sales tax is much lower than other regions, and folks like Denver and Phoenix and those communities, I think are economically competitive or more economically competitive than we are with the dedicated sales tax that we are currently have and are proposing. So that work, as far as I know, hasn't been done, but at the same time, I'm not sure that the premise that that, you know, those jobs are going to go away is really going to happen.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and my comment is it feels a little contentious around here early in the session, and as we've gotten into a bunch of issues, and I find that when I'm home sometimes when it's a little contentious, sometimes a very human story helps relieve the pressure a little bit, and I just thought I'd tell a story about access to jobs. I do ride the bus, and several weeks ago, it was about 8 o'clock at night. And it was one of those, it was about 10 below or 5 below, and I was all bundled up. And I stopped at a bus shelter over in downtown St. Paul to take the Rice Street bus back. And there's a woman waiting in the bus shelter. And we started chatting, because maybe just partly to stay warm. And she told me the story that she lives in, up Rice Street someplace, and she works at the airport. The bus connected her to her job at the airport. She prepares food at the airport for those people who come and go. I'm not guessing that that's a really high wage job, but she depended on that bus, and she talked about how it takes her, sometimes can take her an hour because the service at night can be a little slow and that sort of thing. And yet what really struck me about her was her fine spirit. And here it was, she'd spent a long day. And so I think in terms of connecting people to jobs, we talk a lot about disparities and achievement gaps and economic gaps and that sort of thing. Seems real clear to me, especially in the metropolitan area, that transit offers the opportunity to provide access to employment to people who need it, who really work hard every day to make that living and put up with a lot of sacrifice that I don't think I have to put up with. And so I could ask a question, say, well, would this plan help people like the woman I met the other night? I certainly hope it will.
Thank you. We have one more question. Mr. Chairman, Representative Euglin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, we sit in these committees, and especially now, all these requests are coming in for more money, more sales tax, and everything else. But I have yet to see any agency come before us and say, you know, these are the efficiencies, these are the costs that we're driving down. And if we're facing these significant deficits, and everything else. You know, private business would first of all look at driving down their costs, becoming more efficient. I never see any of that. And, you know, I'm very, very concerned about the fare box recovery issue and things. I think last time we were here, we found out that there hadn't been a price increase for transit people for many, many, many years. And obviously, I'm sure you're making more money. I'm sure that costs have gone up, but you're not recovering those costs. And if we can drive down some of these costs through efficiencies, I don't expect you'll have the answer to this, but with this huge expansion, how many more FTEs are going to be online that we're going to have to pay for? I just don't see much attention put into that. And the question is there an initiative? Is there an initiative underway at the Met Council to examine costs, drive down costs, gain efficiencies, and save the taxpayer money?
Mr. Shutton.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I appreciate your comments. And earlier this summer, we met with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. They had those same questions, and we sat down and went through how we basically run the business of Metro Transit and Metropolitan Area Transit, and had a very fruitful conversation with them about how we operate, because we have to operate as efficiently as possible. And so what I would suggest is that we have that same conversation with you and possibly with the committee about how we do operate and how we do look at efficiencies, because we go through a process, I won't go into too much detail, but called Harvest and Reinvest, that we have to look at poor performing routes and look at areas that, you know, where we have put investments that we just aren't attracting the ridership, and that's just not a good model. And so what we do is over the course of a couple times a year is take a look at our overall service and figure out where we have additional demand and in areas where demand isn't quite as high, and then we move that service around to make sure that we're able to get the most bang out of our buck, or the best return on that service as possible. And so I feel confident that we had a good conversation, and that the Minnesota Chamber understands where we were coming from, and that the efficiencies conversation, and be happy to have the same conversation with you and the committee if you'd like, because I think that is a very fair point.
Mr. Chair, well, I would look forward to that. You know, continuous improvement, driving efficiencies. You got 4,200 people working for you. It's going to be a lot more. Business looks at middle management, consolidation, and efficiencies that way. I'd like to see that. Thank you.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to piggyback on something that Representative Uglem was brought up just a little bit earlier in regard to this fare recovery. This whole 26% to 38% fare recovery business model, just to me and my business head, doesn't compute. And following up, not just on the efficiencies, but with that fare recovery, I would actually like to propose some sort of a study or a finding that if you say that, because this is something that piggybacks also from something on Monday where you said if you were to raise the fares up so high, people will start not driving or not riding, so you're going to lose ridership there. But on the same sense, you're saying that, but if you increase the sales tax to everybody in the metro area, but ridership will still go up. And I don't quite understand that correlation, because you can't have it both ways in my sense.
Mr. Chair and Representative, I think the difference between the two is with the sales tax, we'll be able to provide additional service, new bus service, additional frequency. We will have 20 new transitways in the metro area that are going to attract new riders. With the fare system, when we raise fares, that rider, I think it's maybe we lose somewhere around 3 to 5% of ridership when we raise fares. And over that period of time, it takes us somewhere between a year to 18 months to be able to get those riders back. So we do actually have a cost to the system with what we lose in the ridership. But the difference between the fares and the sales tax is an incredible amount of new service that's going to be provided throughout the region. I mean, I think it's very broad and wide, and it's multimodal. And again, as Chair Dunnick said, over the investment we're looking at is, you know, 17 of the 20 new transitways that we are proposing are bus transitways and arterial bus, and then all kinds of new regular out bus. So it is it's meant for everyone.
Representative Anderson.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. Well, that's precisely my point, is that instead of going for the sales tax on the entire metro area here, why wouldn't, because the government is masters at hiding taxes and fees, why wouldn't we just hide that on top of a fare, including that in there, just as a sales tax to the fare purchase?
Mr. Chair and Representative, I can do the math for you, but the amount of money is drastically different of what you'd be able to do with the increment that you put on the fare. I mean, I'll have our finance people figure out what that is. But I appreciate your point.
Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to make a quick point to the slide that's showing right now. It says transit improves mobility. Yeah. So I am in the field. I'm in the technology field, and another thing that improves mobility is technology. And we've seen this trend in the last couple of years of mobile workforce, work from home, and other capacities and capabilities of employees to be able to shift around and do their work from places other than driving into an employer, brick and mortar, and sitting there for 8 hours and then leaving. So my concern when it comes to commuter rail and light rail, for example, is it gets put in the ground, and it costs a lot of money to put on the ground, lay out the infrastructure, but then it's very difficult to change in the future with shifting population trends and technology that's going to be changing the workforce and the methods of which people work. Unlike bus transit, for example, it can be shifted around dynamically as population and work habits change. So there's a phrase in the technology in my field is, by the time it hits the store shelf, it's already obsolete. Laptops, for example, by the time they hit the shelf in the store at Best Buy, they're already obsolete because the technology that's coming up for the next generation of laptops is in current development. And I think that that is a concern of mine when it comes to some of these systems that we're seeing designed, is it doesn't take into account, in my opinion, sufficiently, some of these shifting populations that will be coming as technology improves.
Mr. Chair, I'll just stop with that. I appreciate your comments.
Okay, thank you. With that, Mr. Shetnan, we appreciate you being at our committee today, and we look forward to that information that you'll get back to the committee. And
great. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
And please feel free to reach out to me with any other questions that you have. I'd be happy to sit down and meet with you or provide that to the committee. So thanks again.
Thank you.
And I'm going to leave the computer up here. It sounds like the next folks are going to be using it.
Okay, before we bring up Greater Minnesota Transit, I believe Mr. Klingel from the Minneapolis Regional Chamber of Commerce. And while he's coming down, Representative Nash, could you you reviewed the minutes?
Mr. Chairman, I have, and I move their adoption.
Representative Nash moves the minutes from Monday, February 2nd. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Those minutes are approved. Thank you. Mr. Klingel, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record. And
thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Todd Klingel. I'm the president of the Minneapolis Regional Chamber of Commerce. And just actually wanted to come in today to briefly put in front of you the Minneapolis Regional Chamber's statement, which was issued in December of last year. So much has happened since then, I realize. But you've had Commissioner Zelli in, and obviously now you just had the Met Council. And it seemed like a good time to at least come in and let you know where one of the leading chambers in the metro area was with regard to transportation overall and transit. We represent over about 1,000 businesses. We're 130 years old here in the metropolitan area, and transportation and transit funding and just having those in our market are very important to us. We spent quite a bit of time on it in the 12 years that I've served as chair, and really just wanted to get this statement in front of you, and then we might lead to further discussions down the line. Did not mean to take serious time out of your hearing today, sir.
Great. Thank you very much. Any questions from members? Thank you, Mr. Klingel. Well,
thank you.
Representative Rundy.
Mr. Klingel, thanks for being here, over here. You know, it's so obvious that much of the corridors are really all about economic development and, yes, mobility, but, you know, big-time economic development and redevelopment. I mean, I know where you'd come down is you want that economic development. We get that. But I guess, you know, it's never stated that way. And I think if we were really honest, we would say, you know, it's all about keeping our cities strong and healthy and all this stuff. But, boy, mobility is a hard one to, you know, to pitch. I mean, what do you think about mobility? The numbers of people on the transit systems compared, and on, let's just say, light rail, compared to the cost. Is it a cost-effective expenditure?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Runbeck. Economic development is part of it, but we're about jobs at the Minneapolis Regional Chamber, so we need people to get to those jobs. If you were in downtown Minneapolis today, this afternoon, in a couple hours, you would see thousands of our workers getting on buses and trains and heading back from those jobs. Over 40% of downtown Minneapolis comes to work by transit, so we want to move the people to where the jobs are. Economic development, I believe in that argument, but and I certainly understand the Central Corridor. I know businesses that said I'm going there because of Central Corridor. Some of that would have happened in our metro area anyway. It's just focused on where the action is, which is around these lines, because the permanence came up earlier. People like that permanence. This line is going to be here, and so I'm going to put my factory or my opportunity here. United Health Group is actually donating land for a station because they know how much that will help them to attract the widest core of possible employees for their organization. So we do believe it's about mobility, and we do believe it's about choice for the rider. There was a discussion earlier about some people with affordability. Many people can afford vehicles and choose to use transit. Others really don't have the option. So we appreciate that mobility. And Representative Hausman brought up a little earlier, it's been a very fascinating discussion, brought up the idea of what about the future? And our future is the millennial population, not just those already in Minnesota, but those that we need to bring to Minnesota, which is far beyond what's already in place here coming out through our system. So the more attractive we are for that next group, the better. And also for those of us that are aging out, frankly, the fewer people in their 80s and 90s that are driving versus taking transit, in my opinion, the better as well.
Thank you, Mr. Klingel.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here at the committee. So we'll now bring down Greater Minnesota Transit.
No.
Member, maybe while we're waiting for this, just a couple comments, because I do feel, as Representative Johnson noted, that maybe this seemed a little contentious this afternoon, and I do have to go to Representative Hornstein's comments on, you know, what our role here is, and that we do have to, as members of this committee, come up with a transportation plan and a transportation policy. It's certainly not to pit one form of transportation over the other. Now, we will have many unelected officials come to our table with big asks, whether it's MnDOT or Met Council, and it is our job as the elected officials to have these conversations and to ask the questions. I guess what I would ask is that as we do that, we're asking pertinent questions that will help the entire committee out, and less grandstanding and maybe making comments to prove a point one way or another. We have plenty of time to debate that on the House floor. We'll have great discussions in here, but I would ask that when we think about questions that we're asking any of these agencies and people who come before us, that we're respectful of them and to each other, so that we can put together a plan that is good for the entire state along with our own constituents. So that's all. Gentlemen, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah. Committee members.
Please state your name for the committee. And
my name is Mark Hall. I'm the Minnesota Public Transit Association president. I'm also the transit director for Pipestone County.
Yes. Hi, I'm excited to be here. Looks like that's one of us. Gary Ludwig, I'm executive director of Trailblazer Transit, Sibley County, McLeod County, and just recently Wright County. Happy to be here.
Jack Larson, I'm the director at Airline Transit. We operate in the 8-county Airline region of Minnesota.
Thank you. I see we might be having a little bit of tough technical difficulty there, but we'll need to proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And we do have copies of your presentation.
So, thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. I'll just briefly go over the handout that you have there, kind of give you a history. The Minnesota Public Transit Association was established in 1975. It is the only statewide coalition of transit system and advocates in the state. MIPTA has historically been the only main advocate for greater Minnesota transit system and riders. This is a membership organization representing transit providers from all over the state, including providers under contract with the Metropolitan Council, as well as riders and vendors. MIPTA's objectives are to act as a statewide voice of public transit in the Minnesota legislature and the Minnesota congressional delegation, support a network of professionals where ideas and experience can be exchanged, and provide a forum to discuss and study issues that affect the industry, support and enhance the operations of public transit systems. So if you turn to the second page, it kind of gives a breakdown of what Greater Minnesota is right now. We're currently 54 public transit providers. The total system count is 54. Last year it was 59. There have been some consolidations that have taken place. So we have various mergers of existing systems and the addition of two new tribal systems in place as well, including the Metropolitan Council Task, Transit Link, rural service inside the 7-county metro area. You have the North Star Commuter Rail and St. Cloud Transit North Star Link system as well in those 54. The next page kind of breaks down, once again, this comes from the statistics from 2010, the Greater Minnesota Transit Plan. 50% of the people that use transit use it at least 5 days a week. 86% ride at least twice a week. 33% are going to work. 20% are going to school. 50% of users in rural counties are 65 years and older. 76% of all of our seniors are female. And 33% of senior trips are medical and basic shopping needs. If you look at the next slide, it talks about Greater Minnesota Transit Service. Currently, there are 70 counties with countywide service. There's 9 counties with only municipal service only, and that's Clearwater, Cass, Nicolet, Le Sueur, Rice, Blue Earth, Olmsted, Faribault, and Wilkin. There's currently 1 county with no service, and that's Waseca. But a little bit about that. They're currently looking at getting service within this year. SmartLink Transit is actually looking at taking on and serving Waseca County. There's six urbanized. That's St. Cloud, Rochester, Duluth, East Grand Forks, La Central, and Moorhead. Wilkin is the newest county to receive public transit. It came on in 2013 and currently is in the community of Breckenridge. Service comes from a provider out of Ottertail and Clay counties. You might mention, you know, the different programs, and that's why I have these two gentlemen with us today as well, so I can talk about briefly what Pipestone County Transit does at this time. We have a what we call a dial-a-ride system. We serve the Pipestone County area. We have four buses that we run on a daily basis. Last year, we provided over 30,000 rides to our community and to our county. We also have 10 volunteers that we use on a regular basis that take people throughout the state as well as throughout Pipestone County. We logged on those four buses 100,000 miles last year. With our volunteer service, we logged 100,000 miles as well. So that's primarily how we define our system in Pipestone County. Gary, you want to talk about your system briefly?
Certainly. Sibley, McLeod, Wright counties. We run primarily dial-a-ride service. We also have volunteer driver service. Volunteer driver service are individuals in their own cars. They use their own personal vehicles, and they volunteer their time, and we utilize those resources when we don't have buses to get to all the rural areas that we serve. We are doing, just for Sibley and McLeod counties, we were doing about 150,000 rides. We just took on Wright County, and we're going to double our ridership in 1 year. So we're excited to take on Wright County. I asked MIPTA why they invited me to this meeting. Yes. It's kind of a last-minute thing, and I understand that somebody requested we come. And they told me I'm aggressive, good-looking, and funny. I'm sure when we're all done here, you'll agree that I'm mostly good-looking. I'm also Republican. I lean much more Republican than I do Democrat. And I look at this very differently. So I'm enjoying the conversation, and I'm kind of the blend. I kind of see both sides, and I build balance. I build compromise. Particularly in Wright County, which is very Republican. And we weren't well received at first in Wright County, and now the tide has turned in a very short amount of time. But transit is about people, of course, but it's also about money. And we look at it very much, at least at Trailblazer, we balance the both of them, but I'd like to give you just a different. If I could leave here giving one message, this is the message I'd like to leave. I can't speak to Twin Cities, Metro-type transit systems all that much. I've been doing this 18 years. I've constructed from scratch three different transit systems. And we've made them very successful in counties as small as Sibley County. And I love Sibley County, but they don't even have a McDonald's. Okay, there's no stoplights in Sibley County. Okay, and we made it very successful. And with Sibley and McLeod County combined, they were willing, conservative counties, they were willing at one point to put in more than $600,000 of local share into their public transit system, into Trailblazer Transit. These are two small counties, combined population of 45,000, and the county commissioners there put in $600,000 of local share. Why do they do that? Okay, here's the anatomy of a rural transit system, at least from Trailblazer's perspective. What we do is we look at various entities in the counties that receive tax dollars, okay, that put transportation on the road, whether it be nursing homes, day training and habilitation centers, adult daycare centers, you name it, nursing homes, assisted livings. You see all these buses everywhere. The anatomy of Trailblazer, at least, and many of the other rural transit systems, the concept is to take the money and the resources away from the individual silos. And we pool those resources together, and we coordinate them, make them more efficient. We house the administration and the control of those vehicles and resources under one roof to make it more efficient, and then we open it up to the general public. Okay? Those are very Republican, very conservative ideals. Okay, and the trade-off is, instead of each little entity having their own vehicle at their own time, okay, now they have to, novel idea, they have to share those resources. Okay, and that's what the public transit systems do in greater Minnesota. We pull these resources together, okay, we make it more economical, okay, and we share. Does everybody like to share? No. That's what we deal with. We deal with conflict and controversy all the time, but we make people share and we utilize these resources more economically, and we do it more cost-effectively than these separate agencies do. So, Representative over there, I was really interested in your comments, and I hope I made your day. Somebody came to the table and said, we're saving some money.
That's good.
Okay? So I was very happy to hear that conversation. And then one last... Oh, sorry, Mr. Chair. Go ahead.
Oh, are you
paying
questions, Mr. Chairman?
Representative
Hurt. You're suggesting that bigger is better, and that exactly the opposite of conservative policy.
Please continue with your presentation.
Well, that's the message that I wanted it to give.
Okay.
Thank you for your point. I personally don't think bigger is better. I arm wrestle with MnDOT and my people quite a lot that bigger is not better. You lose something when you get bigger, but the impetus is on to do more with less and for better economics and scalability. All of greater Minnesota is in this regionalization process.
Absolutely.
We're doing the very best we can, at least at Trailblazer. So I'll turn it over. Thank you for listening.
Jack, would you like to talk about Arrowheads? Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I provided a handout here because I can't quite do what Gary does as far as talking. So he left off with saying, talking about bigger, we're one of the largest rural transit systems in the nation. So I just wanted to make sure that you had some numbers here in front of you to see exactly what we do on a yearly basis. If I can leave one thing with you from this discussion, our ridership increased 6% over last year. And that's the trend we've had for 10 years. So if we're here looking for funding or if we're here looking for ideas on why we need funding, that is one of the reasons. The ridership is out there. We have to be able to make sure that we have the tools to provide those rides.
Thank you, Jack.
Thank you.
To briefly go back to the slide, right? If you look at the next slide on page 5, Greater Minnesota Ridership, in 2012, Greater Minnesota Transit Systems provided 11.5 million rides, and about 1.9 million were provided in 2013. So Greater Minnesota Transit is going up in ridership. Providing transit in rural communities keeps them strong. Working with local colleges and universities to reduce parking needs and provide services to students, providing services to meet the needs of local business and entry-level workers, and providing rides to seniors, which allow them to continue to live in their homes and avoid costs of assisted living, as well as allows them to continue to do business with their local barbers, grocery stores, hardware stores, etc. On the next slide, if you look, we have operation funding sources. 2012 is there and 2013 as well. Local share grew by 2.2 million and federal shares dropped by 1.2 million in 2011 and 2012. The actual local share from all sources was 28% in 2012, and in 2013 it was 23%. Local share often means an increase to property tax as well. Statutory requirements, 85-15 split on state and local for county and small urban, and 80-20 on large urban systems. That's our current split with the state. In recent growth in funds for leased vehicle revenue has had two positive outcomes: reducing the burden borne on some local governments in excess of requiring 15 and 20% share, as well as improving the fleets. Greater Minnesota Transit's total fleet of rural and small urban systems is 668 vehicles. About 19%, or about 127 vehicles, are beyond their useful life. So in 2012, 60% of our fleet was beyond its useful life. If you go to the next slide, meeting state goals. In Greater Minnesota, we address unmet needs in existing systems, add services in unserved counties, and in unserved communities, add evening and weekend services where it's necessary, and funding the expansion of services. The TFAC report recommends an increased annual investment up to $45 million. It's actually dropped because of the return on the investments the last few years by $3 million, so that's $42 million by 2020. At this time, I just want to make sure that the reason we're here, and you know, Gary sums it up, we just want to make sure that the committee, if they have any questions, is able to ask some of your Greater Minnesota Transit providers questions. We just want to make sure that we're at the table as well, and that's MIPTA's role, to make sure that we're at the table when discussion talks about budgets come up. We don't forget Greater Minnesota Transit. One of the things, and Gary says it best, we do compromise. We work with our locals. We look at coming up with innovations. On the southwest corner of the state, we've adopted technology to try to utilize our system better, to be more efficient. We're looking at regionalization with MnDOT. That's a drive, so we're using those assets and sharing those assets in a constructive way. We'll continue to do that, and we want to work with the folks here at the Capitol to ensure that Greater Minnesota Transit continues into the future. At this time, we'll be open to any discussion, any questions you might have.
Thank you. Representative Bernardi.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. I have several questions here. Thank you for your presentation, and I'm glad that you are at the table. I think these are important needs for transportation across our state of Minnesota. There is just a recent Office of Economic Status of Women went around the state to find out what the issues were for women and their economic security. And one of the number one actually issue that came out of that was transportation. And some of the things, and that's what I wanted to ask you a little bit about, and it could be Mr. Hall or Mr. Ludwig. You women said the second and third shift is very difficult for transportation. And you mentioned adding evening hours. Is that, I can't remember the context in which you said that, and I was just wondering, how are you addressing the needs of people for the second and third shift?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I'll guess I'll answer first, and then Mr. Ludwig can answer as well. One of the things that we do is I actually I'm on a committee for women's issues in Pipestone County, and that has come up. One of the ways that we provide transit outside of our normal operating hours is to use those volunteer drivers that we have. They're an excellent resource. They're very cost effective, especially if we have to transport people to, say, Marshall or some other area where they can find employment. We have families that, for whatever reason, their children are removed from the home and maybe they go for visitation. We've been working with folks to do that too, and that's usually at night. So we will continue to work with the groups. I sit on, like I said, the committee to work on women's issues in Pipestone, and that was just recently brought up. And so we're continuing to engage to try to find other ways to provide transportation. The answer in rural areas isn't always to use the bus. Sometimes it's to come up with another resource.
Yes, thank you for the question. Relative to adding service, I'm more of a tough cookie to add service to. It's got to make business sense, economic sense. There has to be minimum performance standards. There has to be demand that exists there. So we certainly can look at adding evening and weekend hours, but I need to see demand already there, and the finances are going to have to make sense. Relative to the issues of women, we certainly recognize that at Trailblazer. Most notably for us, we see it as the economics of today that both the husband and the wife are working. They're dual adult, you know, dual parent, you know, incomes, jobs. So we make our bus service very user friendly for moms to get, mostly moms, but parents in general, to get their kids to daycare and then between daycare and preschool. In fact, our ridership at Trailblazer, more than 30% of our rides are children under the age of 18. A large number of them preschools, which helps the parents, and most notably the mom in our society, to get their kids back and forth to and from school so they can go to work. Or if the child is sick, then we can use Trailblazer to get the child maybe to grandma or somebody else who can care for them so mom doesn't have to take off of work. Now, as Mr. Hall here was discussing, in southwestern Minnesota, they have these volunteer drivers. Trailblazer has created a different division of our agency called Smart Ride, and it's one of the few in the state. But we basically use 100% local tax dollars, property tax dollars, to fund Smart Ride, and that is an option for parents, moms, go to work, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So it's kind of it's not the public transit system, but it's a separate component that we created that people can use to get transportation 24 hours a day, 7 days a week in the entire state of Minnesota. So we've done innovative things like that to take care of those types of issues.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'm not done. Okay.
Mr. Bernardi. Yeah,
thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just a little disappointed that I saw Met Council transit people leaving right before your presentation, because it seems like there might be some, maybe they're here. Oh, yeah. Okay, I saw it. You came back. Thank you. But I'm sorry your management people, they left, because I think there's some, we can learn from each other. We have a big system in the metropolitan area, but yet oftentimes it's getting people to the downtown centers for employment. It's not addressing the needs of people to be able to get to doctor's appointments or people to get to their daycare or to grocery stores. I mean, I know a story where a couple public health professionals went into a neighborhood to get to a grocery store that was fairly close, but not close enough that you could carry your groceries back. It took like 45 minutes to be able to make the transfers and actually get to that grocery store. So anyway, I like how you guys are trying to address the needs and actually listening to people and figuring out how to address it. And it would be cool, I think it would be a great opportunity to figure out how we can learn from each other to help meet the needs of people in their daily lives, whether they're caregivers or their workers or their parents or students. So I hope we can learn from one another. So I'll leave it at that. I'll leave it at that for right now. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Whalen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if you have to compete at all with private industries up in Greater Minnesota and kind of what that looks like, because you mentioned specifically the elderly population, especially needing help with that. And I know at least in the areas around the metro, there are lots of private home care industries that provide those transportation services, obviously at a much higher cost. And so I'm just kind of wondering if that what that looks like in Greater Minnesota.
Mr. Hall?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative. One of the things that, obviously, in a rural area, Pipestone's pretty rural, what happens is that you see we become the predominant provider of transit. There are other transit providers, such as People Express Mobility, that comes in, but predominantly we become the primary transit provider in that area. So when it comes to taking people from nursing homes to the clinic, that's what our role becomes. Working with our partners, one of the things that we're trying to do is come up with solutions when those timelines don't work. So we work with our clinics, work with our hospitals and our care facilities to try to get people those appointments when the system is working and functioning. For instance, we take an individual from Edgerton 3 days a week for dialysis by wheelchair. And so when we do that, we try to schedule as many other people in that facility that could go to the care facility at the same time. Now, that always means that when you're using those assets, someone might have to wait a little while to get back to the facility, but we try to maximize the assets the best way we can. So I hope that answers your question. Yeah.
Mr. Chair, can I address that, please?
Well, we do have one more question. I'd like to get to Representative Johnson, and then we're up against the clock again.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Johnson. Chair, and my question is on the last slide where it says by July 1st, 2015, the statute says we need to meet 80% of transit needs. Now, that's just about less than 5 months away. Do you anticipate that we will be meeting 80% of transit needs in rural Minnesota by the summer?
Mr. Hall.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I would, excuse me? We are currently at 61%. I was going to defer to Mr. Shadire. So currently we're at 61%. So no, I do not think we'll meet the needs.
Thank you, gentlemen, for being at our committee today. We appreciate your presentation. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we're at time here, so I don't want to raise a new issue, and maybe we could deal with this on Monday for just a couple of minutes. But I know that the groundhog saw a shadow, and that means 6 more weeks until the first bill deadline. And so I was just, maybe on Monday we could talk just for very briefly about, how we're going to be, hearing bills and discussing some of the finance ideas and proposals that are going to come forward and, a road or transit map for the rest of this time period would be helpful. So maybe, we could talk briefly about that on Monday.
I think that'd be great, and I'd be looking for your input along with Representative Earhart in actually designing that. Members, just so you know, we're going to have a longer meeting on Monday, so we're going to start at 12:15. We've tried to save your evening because we do have the department coming in. We also have a Minlar's update, and we're going to do the oil transport study that Representative Hornstein was working on as well. So we're going to start at 12:15, and I would appreciate your indulgence in having a little longer meeting. Anything else? Yes, in room 5. Oh, and yes, thank you, Representative. Please feel free to keep your books, take your books with you, and or you can leave them, and they will house them for you. Thank you, members. This meeting is adjourned.